Welcome to Tribecast. I'm Forrest Walden, founder and CEO of Iron Tribe Fitness. And on this podcast, I am going to help you find your tribe and maximize your life. Welcome to another episode of Tribecast. This morning, I have the privilege of sitting down with friend Caleb Crosby. Caleb is the president and CEO of the Alabama Policy Institute, as well as a bit of a serial entrepreneur that we'll get into today, talk about some of his endeavors he does outside of his role as CEO. Yellowhammer News called him one of the 50 most powerful and influential people to know in Alabama, so thought he would be great for the show and excited he carved out a little time for us. Caleb, welcome to the show.
Forrest, thanks for having me.
So for those of us who don't know you, give us the 10,000-foot picture of who Caleb is.
Sure. Yeah, that's tough to cover the entirety of someone in one question. But, yeah, grew up in South Alabama in Jackson, oldest of six, played baseball through school. That carried me through college as well. Was fortunate enough to have a scholarship there. Got drafted by the Texas Rangers my sophomore year in college, but decided to do one more year of school that next year to improve that draft status. I ended up tearing my elbow my third game my junior year. Had Tommy John surgery, and wasn't sure what that looked like. Was able to redshirt, rehab, come back 18 months later. Kept my scholarship, but never was quite as effective post-surgery. Had an opportunity at that time with a finance degree to work on President Bush's reelect campaign in Washington, D.C., just at that time as a staff assistant.
All right, so let me stop you for a second, because I'm curious. I don't know this part of your story. When you tore your elbow, did that pretty much ruin your chances to play pro?
It certainly set them back substantially. Okay. Because that was an 18-month recovery. A lot can happen in between. I did come back physically the same spot that I was before. Did have opportunities, a lot of scout interest, but really lost it mentally. Some of that due to, I think, just knowing that I need to find the plan B. And some of that really is just a shaky confidence after coming back from an injury like that that I never mentally overcame. And so many people have done it. I mean, Strasburg, who just won the MVP, he had Tommy John. He came back from it. So, you know, I can't blame the Tommy John for it. But it is it's a difficult thing to come back through, and I was unable to do it.
Well, the listeners can't see you, but are you 6'6"?
Is it 6'6", 6'5", somewhere in that range?
Yeah, so you're definitely built to be a pitcher.
Right, yep.
Got that build and tall and slender. So that's cool. Okay, so now talk about you getting into politics.
Yeah, so I had an opportunity. Long story short, I've got an uncle who had been involved in the accounting side of politics before. He married my aunt later in life. He loved baseball, so we'd become close. And he was the only one in my family who was in business. That's what I wanted to go into. And one day he said, "Hey, how about you really ought to go work a political campaign?" I said, "Gosh, that's a terrible idea. I've got no interest in doing that." And he got kind of frustrated, and he said, "Well, I'm gonna send you your resume to friend of mine in D.C. I said, "Sure." And so he did, and about a month later, and this is after I graduated, I got an email from a guy on President Bush's reelect campaign that said, "Hey, do you want to come up here for an interview? I got your resume." And I called my uncle and said, "Look, I'm broke. I got ring debt, credit card debt from school. I can't afford to fly up there just for an interview." And he said, "You get off your lazy tail and you drive up there." I said, "All right." So I wanted him to keep helping me. So drove, and halfway through the interview, the guy said, "How was your flight? Do you have any delays?" I said, "Oh, I didn't have any delays. I drove my car." He's like, "From freaking Alabama for an interview?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, you're hired then if you'll drive there for an interview." Called my uncle again, said, "Hey, I don't know about this." And he said, "Look, most people are going to be on a presidential reelect campaign. It's going to be, who their dad is, how much money they've given, influence. They're mostly going to want a networking party. There's going to be a ton of work to be done. Put your head down, work hard. It'll open up some doors for you." At that time, I wanted to get an MBA. They want a couple years of work experience. He said, "This will be perfect for reference, work experience, you name it." And so that's how I initially got in.
It's good advice.
It was good advice, yeah. It was a great door open that I didn't know what it would lead to at that time, but grateful for it.
So how long was that period?
So worked there for 2 years, and then when the president won re-election, that opens up doors to work in the administration. And so I spent some time at the EPA, a couple of years at the White House, and at the Department of Treasury, all doing financial management pieces there. And then ended up having the opportunity to be the CFO at the NRCC, which is the House arm of the Republican Party. their treasurer had embezzled $750,000 over 7 years. So I kind of came in during that scandal, replaced him, an opportunity to kind of rebuild the foundation.
Wow.
There. So we.
And that was in D.C.?
That was in D.C.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So we were there.
So how long were you there in
about
total?
8 years.
Okay.
Yep. My wife's from Leroy. We met and started dating in high school.
You better define Leroy.
Leroy, Alabama. I assume you got mostly Alabama listeners.
Yeah.
Everybody knows where Leroy is. Yeah. It's about an hour north of Mobile.
Okay.
And it's right next to Jackson, separated by a river, which is where I'm from.
Okay.
Yeah, so we started dating, got married, moved there, had two children there. I thought we'd be there 2 years and move on. We were there 8, and thankfully the Lord opened up a door to come back here and work for API
okay.
about 9 years ago.
So you started as a VP.
Yep.
And eventually took over the CEO role.
Correct.
Talk to us about what API is, what you do. First time I met with you, I really didn't know.
Sure.
So I think it's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a 501c3 nonprofit, and our goal is pretty straightforward and simple. We work on state policy in Alabama to promote free markets, limited government, and strong families. And so any policies that push towards that, I mean, really limit, you know, freedom and enterprise in the state of Alabama is what we work towards. And we do that in two ways, educating the public. There's a lot of people who would just use terminology like conservative or different things that it more has a cultural context for them. And we really want to drive in and help educate them of what that means, of how they should expect their government to interact with them. We educate with the public. And then we also work with policymakers, our state leaders, elected officials, people who are put in that position to make those decisions, to also inform them of legislation and things that will get us in that place. So, you know, our said goal is to maximize Alabamians' ability to flourish, you know, see each person reach their full potential and have that full opportunity. And we believe it's through those three principles.
Can you say the three again? I know free market.
Free market, limited government, and strong families.
Man, that makes so much sense. So talk to us about something you're currently working on that's pressing.
Sure. This is a time where we're doing a lot of research and analysis to prepare for the next session. I think education will be a hot topic. The National Education Rankings just came out last week. And for the first time since they've been doing those rankings, Mississippi just leapfrogged us. You know, and there's a little cachet that says, we're always says, thank gosh, you know, for Mississippi, and we really can't say that anymore. I mean, they leaped us a pretty good bid.
In education,
yeah, wow. In the national rankings. We've been.
Does that mean we're dead last?
In several categories, we're 49th, yeah.
Wow.
So we're pretty close to it. We're digging in because they actually spend less per child than we do. And so we're trying to go in and look and see what it is they're doing or that we're not doing to get those better outcomes. So educational, I think, will be a big piece. There's amendment coming up in March that we'll all be asked to vote on of kind of restructuring how the state school board looks. So we've been engaged in that. You'll see prisons. That's taken a lot of press recently. That'll be a big one that we're working towards. Occupational licensing will be another one that'll come up. Some of these we won't go into great in depth. It's on our website. Some of this is, you know, you want to be able to have a chance to dig into. There'll be some tax pieces, Medicaid expansion, just many other topics that'll be coming up next session.
So you're dealing with everything at the state level.
Just
so
the
like
state.
2020 election, how does that affect you or does that affect you?
It really doesn't affect us from a policy standpoint, but it certainly informs how we communicate to people because, you know, when you turn on the TV, you're 99% of the time going to see something about federal and what's happening federally. And so we're very aware of what's coming there and then how to message and communicate what we should be doing here as a state.
And with what you do, is it bipartisan? Are you working on both sides of the aisle? Is it mainly Republican? I mean, when I hear your three descriptions, I hear Republican more than I hear Democrat. But how does that play out?
Yeah, that's a great question. By law, as a 501c3, we cannot be political, and we have to be bipartisan.
Okay.
Now, you know, bipartisan means pick party. party throughout history. The Democrat Party may have subscribed to that at some point throughout history.
Yep.
Republicans seem to more now. And so, yeah, we don't pay attention to party. We've always been about those three principles for the last 30 years, regardless of where it fits on party. So we don't promote a party one way or the next. We focus strictly on those principles. Any person from any party wants to work on those, then we want to work with them.
Okay. Well, and, you know, I say that. I don't think any Democrat would say they're against strong families.
Correct.
Maybe I'm mainly thinking limited government. Maybe in some examples, free market with what we're hearing from the 2020 platform at this point. Okay. So what does the size of your team look like? Kind of what is your role day to day? I know just reading from the website, I know you're involved in fundraising for API.
Sure.
What is your role and who do you lead?
Yeah, so we've got about 10 full-time, and we've really been building out a scholars program of folks who either have, you know, have been a leader and served time, who've now gotten either, you know, older or different seasons to kind of bring their voice back into to play to help that education. We've also been bringing a lot of different writers who've been out to kind of bring them under the banner and let them communicate their message as it pertains to these principles. And so, you know, the whole team, when you count that, we've probably got 15 or 20 that are engaged in some form or fashion of accomplishing that mission. And then, you know, my role runs the gamut. Obviously, we're 501c3. We don't take any government money or any money that would be perceived to impact or influence which positions we take. And so it's just individuals who are inclined and believe that those three things, you know, maximize human flourishing and care about that for other citizens. And so there is a large fundraising component that goes into it.
And so you said individuals. Do businesses give as well?
Mm-hmm. We got about 80%, roughly 80% historically, individual, 10% corporate, and 10% foundation.
Okay. And so you're nurturing those donor relationships, keeping them updated on what kind of policies are coming down the pipe. I'm sure your successes on what you've helped pass.
Absolutely.
And then continuing to garner the continued support from those guys.
Yes, yeah. And those relationships are not just always funding, too. A lot of times those are key influencers within the state.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's multifaceted as in those relationships and what they're looking for from us and vice versa.
Okay. What else besides fundraising?
Yeah, I mean, it's overall setting the vision and tone, obviously recruiting the team and make sure we got the right people in the right place, figuring out and navigating an ever-changing environment, you know, with API and how we're structured, you know, a carrot and a stick speaks loudly in politics and we carry neither. And so it's really just pressing upon, you know, other people who care to engage in those issues and helping them see how this does benefit our society and each person here, regardless of kind of their income background or where they started from. We want people to have equal opportunity. There's a big distinction between equal opportunity and equal outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
We hear a lot of this day and age about equal outcomes. And, you know, we don't believe in equal outcomes. We do believe in equal opportunities. It's what made America great. And so we're constantly trying to keep the government, you know, from suppressing those who don't have in the sake of helping them and allowing people to be able to use their gifts and talents to, you know, flourish for themselves and their family. And then that ultimately helps, you know, our state and our country. And so, you know, we spend a lot of time in that messaging. You know, a lot of these issues, you know, they are oversimplified in cable news these days. It just seems like it's very black and white. We literally live in those tight spaces where it's not always clear what the right answer is. Which one of these do you go this way or that way? And does that maximize flourishing? Is that really free market? Is that not? Not proper English there, but that's where we spend a lot of time is debating and figuring those things out.
And so are you involved in that piece of it? Like
yes.
Getting in there, rolling up your sleeves and...
I'm not an extremely in-the-weeds person, but we've got an extremely talented team that can help dive in, do the research, do those numbers, and then kind of bring up for discussion, you know, really the information we need to make a decision on.
Cool. Well, appreciate what you guys are doing because I believe in all three of those things very strongly. Resonates with me. We mentioned early on that you're a bit of a serial entrepreneur as well. You said your uncle obviously was a big influence on you. He was the only one in your family who was in business. So you didn't grow up in a home that was necessarily nurturing being an entrepreneur and owning your own business. But it sounds like your uncle had a heavy influence on that.
He did. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, most of my family is more on kind of the healthcare side. And so we were expected to work, and, you know, that led to as many people start, you know, grass cutting or anything else you could provide service to get income. We were, you know, was told early on that, you know, a car wouldn't be purchased for me. If I wanted one, we had to buy it. And so a lot of those incentives led towards just figuring out ways to generate some income.
And so you've kept that up. You've done a few things on the side. I know you got a couple businesses. Why don't you talk about that and
sure.
What that looks like?
Yeah, I think it's been helpful to, you know, to keep my hands in the marketplace as we work towards policy. There's the tendency to, as people get into policy, they get into what other people call more an ivory tower, and they live in this philosophy that doesn't always translate, mm-hmm. you know, to the boots on the ground. And so I've been fortunate enough to have some opportunities to, you know, partner with some other entrepreneurs to help them see their dreams come true, to realize building a business or seeing opportunities and seeing those flourish. And so that's run the gamut of a number of different industries. None of those do I, you know, run those entities, but have partners who, you know, they have a passion for a certain space. And so my role has been to kind of help build a team around them, give them the tools they need to hope to see them succeed. So I love being able to be a part of those things.
And so just from speaking with you several times in the past, you're very clear on what your skill set is, mm-hmm. what you bring to the table and what you don't bring to the table.
Right.
And a lot of times where I see people getting sideways and messed up is they're not clear on those things, and they maybe try to double down on their weakness, like operations or getting into the details.
Right.
You don't seem to have that struggle. You know, this is what I bring to the table, and if you want a partner, here's what I will do and what I won't do. Is that accurate?
Right. Yeah, and you know, it's been easier for me because my weaknesses are so extreme that I've had many a coach and teacher throughout my life tell me you're terrible at this or you're not good at it. And even though, you know, early on I had the philosophy that you work on your weaknesses and try to make those your strengths. And, you know, Culture Index, which I know you use, mm-hmm. finally broke the back of that.
Okay.
And so I, you know, came to a full realization and got demasked that, yeah, there's certain things that there's no way I'm ever going to be great at them.
Yep.
So that's helped to make sure that I'm not moving into those spaces. And look, it's made life better in general. The things I really enjoy, I focus on those.
Mm-hmm.
And recognizing there's some people who absolutely love to do the things that I'm not good at. And so, yeah, that partnership relationship, whether it's team, staff, partners, helps.
Well, it also helps you pick the right partnerships from the beginning. Because
right.
if you go into something unequally yoked and they have expectations for you to do something that you never pledged to do. So, yeah, that's how you're able to do businesses on the side and run something like API. All right. So let's talk about what you do. Obviously, you've got a lot of responsibility. You've got people looking to you. You've got donor relationships you're nurturing. You've got policy that's literally driving what the state does. A lot of responsibility. Let's talk about how you, as a leader, invest in yourself. Let's start with body. What does that look like? Again, I mentioned you can't see him, but he's in great shape, great looking guy, 6'6", striking figure. What does that look like for you to make sure that you're on point every day?
Sure. Yeah. Well, that piece came into play, you know, coming out of high school, again, a small school where we didn't have a lot of coaching or training. That was not part of my regimen. And my freshman year in college, had a pretty good year, but wasn't where I wanted to be, velocity and other things. And so that whole summer just really threw myself into studying and learning weight training and eating. Ended up gaining 24 pounds, and my velocity jumped 7 miles an hour.
To what?
I went from 89 to 90, 95 was the hardest I threw.
Nice.
And so that really, you know, informed, and that was not only just the velocity and athletic ability, but everything else that did, you know, mentally, spiritually, you know, getting in that type of shape, kind of taking control instead of, you know, indulging, you know, but being more disciplined in those areas.
Was that the summer summer between your freshman and sophomore year?
Freshman and sophomore year.
Man, that's my identical story.
Is it really?
Yeah, mine was 35 pounds and like four. I made cheerleading. I was the smallest guy in the squad, and I just sold out to writing down everything I ate, training all summer. So, yeah, it changed my whole life. So you and that 24 pounds, that's awesome.
Yeah, same. And so really from then on, that was obviously critical through, finishing sports in college. There were periods during those campaigns and when we worked so many hours that was difficult to do.
I bet.
But it's something that's been critical for me. I mean, I've often, envied people who seem to maintain a certain level of energy and all without it. But it's something that I've always needed to do and had to do.
Okay. So you don't have the story of, hey, I was an athlete and then I got out of school and I quit working out for 10 years. And then so you've always trained.
Always in some level. There's been some years during there that were, better than others. But some form or fashion, I've always kept exercise as a regular part of my regimen.
Okay. So what does that look like? How many times a week? What do you do? What does your diet look like?
Sure. Yeah. Four to 5 days a week in CrossFit style type workouts is what I currently do. And then I stick to a primarily paleo diet. That's worked best for me. I've experimented with different things in the past. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest impact for me is just eating whole foods for me personally, and less protein and supplements, which is what I focused on primarily in college. And that's eating the whole food component has made a big difference. I think growing up, my mom was into the fat-free craze, which is why I never could gain weight. And then, when we started, all the magazines I assume you had and all the resources we had were more bodybuilding type things.
Yep.
And for me, I've always been more slender, and so I needed more fat and calories, which I still tried to avoid then. So that, I think that's probably been the biggest thing that's helped me, is eating more about focusing on more whole foods.
So when you say primarily paleo, do you do grains, do you do dairy, or pretty much just meat and vegetables?
Primarily meat and vegetables.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I cheat on Sundays and for most part eat what I want. But, once you've gotten to a routine of eating that, your body doesn't necessarily always like when you introduce some of those things back in it.
So yep. it's good reinforcement.
Yeah.
For sure. One thing I've noticed eating paleo is just a very consistent energy source,
mm-hmm.
right? You don't have the highs and lows.
Yeah.
You're just consistently on. Do you experience that?
I do, yeah. When I'm doing it really well, I certainly do.
And when you cheat on Sunday, you're like, oh man, this bloated and this kind of up and down, like this is why I don't do it, right?
Yep.
Okay, so that clearly helps you show up at work ready, primed, full of energy to do everything that you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Do you work out in the morning, at lunch?
Yeah,
is
morning.
It change?
Yeah, okay. 6 a.m.
Okay.
When I work out. Yeah, but outside of that, it's hard to be consistent with kids' schedules and everything else. I'd like to keep my calendar free as much as I can to let work, take priority till 5 and then family take priority after that. So that's one space that doesn't have any conflict with work or family most days, and I can stay at it and stay consistent and get up. I've never been an early morning person. That wasn't natural for me. It took a long time to get it, but I just knew that if I didn't make that the case, I wouldn't be able to stay as consistent as I want. I'm probably going to have to switch to a 5 a.m. here before too long. Just the kids' routines are getting started earlier.
They are. But,
that's probably coming soon.
So for you to move earlier, would that allow you Well, let me back up. So now at 6 a.m., do you take the kids to school or you just see them before they leave? What does that look like?
Yeah, both. We switch it up. So, my wife may disagree, but we split it probably evenly on taking kids to school.
Okay. So you're able to get your workout in, mm-hmm. get home, yep. get showered, and still take them to school.
Yes.
Yeah. So I've had a couple guests who have gotten into Ironman training and all that type stuff, and they've had to move. It's ridiculous. One moved his workout back to 4:15 and one to 3:40 so that they could still maintain the balance of home and taking kids to school. So, 5 is going to hurt, but take heart. There's guys getting up at 3:40 to spend 2 hours on the bike.
Sometimes.
All right, let's talk about balance. Happen to know your family because we go to church together, but you've been married 16 years, 3 kids. What are you doing? I mean, one of your primary focuses at API is strong families,
right?
So you don't want to be doing everything in your power to do that for the Alabama, not in your own home, right?
Yeah.
So what have you done to create a strong family environment, both in your marriage and with your kids?
Yeah, that's a really I think, important topic, because we see that often in politics and others where, you know, the very thing people promote and talk about and educate on, the tendency is to go all in that space because you feel like you're helping so many people, but to, you know, abandon that, yep. Not intentionally, in your own life. And that's a daily struggle. And I think we put some things in place to try to do it, but it's not so much physically where I'm located as where my mind is, mm-hmm. and that's where my battle is. I can put the things in place and not schedule anything after certain times. I can show up to games, but it's really, you know, in those moments when I'm with my wife or if I'm with my children, what is it I'm thinking about? You know, am I thinking about what is their life like right now? Am I thinking about intentional questions that I'm going to ask them? Or is my mind wandering to the dozen problems that I'm thinking about that I need to solve in that moment? And so that's how it's, you know, defined for me. And I think you and I talked about this a little bit at lunch. What's helped me tremendously there is that, you know, from a spiritual standpoint, you know, from theologically, I no longer believe that I, Caleb, am to define what success looks like for me, for policy, for my kids, for this world. You know, if we look through Scripture, most people got it wrong into what they thought God wanted and what He really mm-hmm. wanted, and He had always a different path of getting there, and it certainly looked different, at least in their short lifespan on this earth. So that's one that's helped begin to free me of not letting certain priorities blend in and mess up others. The other one is that, you know, I also no longer feel responsible for achieving the success that I don't even know what it is. Hmm. And so having that mentality is what I do feel responsible for is to be faithful. And so faithful means, you know, you could take policy or fundraising. That work never ends. I mean, you could go 24 hours a day and still not feel like you did enough. And so at some point you have to shut it off and know that, you know, this is what the Lord's called me to do as a husband and father and citizen and friend, and be able to be involved in church and other activities. At some point you cut it off and trust that He's got it. And that is something that is a daily struggle.
That's where the daily struggle comes in.
That's a daily struggle. And it's all based on confidence. You know, there's times where you feel low or depressed, and that's when you want to go in and try to do more and make it happen. I can also experience that the low moments are also the high moments, because it feels good when you accomplish something you wanted to. Oh, yeah. And so then you're like, well, let's do more of that because that felt really good. And so my you know, battle and weaknesses oftentimes is wanting wins, and whatever those wins look like. A win is just accomplishing what you said you wanted to do. And even though theologically, you know, I recognize I don't always know what that is, but I still want to make up a list every day and check it off. And so anyway, it's a daily struggle.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of the things that have worked for you with that mindset.
Yeah.
I've heard it said, be where your feet are, right? Don't be spending time with your family and really thinking about work, like you said, and vice versa. So when you're on your game and things are going well, what are some rhythms you guys have put into place, both with Destin and the kids?
Yeah, a weekly date night is something, you know, that we were fairly resistant to, you know, whether it be financially, and many other excuses that we could come up with. But we've been doing that for, you know, 2 to 3 years now. And that's been critical just for our own level of communication and closeness. We don't every single time hit a week, but a week is our goal. And so then at least we're getting pretty close. But those have been critical mm-hmm. For us in our marriage. And everyone's different. You know, we're all wired different. And so for Destin and I, that's really fun for us to go out a night on the town, enjoy being together and having fun together.
Do y'all do any kind of travel together? Just you without the kids?
We've both realized that we're primarily homebodies.
Okay.
We will do some, obviously, throughout the year. We're not anti, but we've kind of gotten burnt out in that past and realized that she's a homebody. I like being around home. And so that we've tried to take more an effort and energy of kind of pouring resources into that spot.
Okay. What about your kids? I mean, a lot of dads never take their kids to school, so you're obviously doing that in the morning, mm-hmm. making sure you're seeing them. What habits do you have with them? And I really like to ask, with multiple kids, have you been anything successful to create one-on-one time and not just group time?
Yeah, well, you know, again, referencing CI, again, you know, I have a very high C, and so for me, I really need the one-on-one time with them. It overwhelms me to have three talking at me at the same time, and so I'm not very effective in digging into their lives, being intentional with them. So one-on-one time has been critical over the last couple of years. And so with my son, we get a lot of time to be together through coaching his teams, through sporting events, mm-hmm. through spending a lot of time in the outdoors together. My daughter's I have to be really, really intentional there. And the best thing that we found there is doing I alternate right now every other week with my daughters on doing a breakfast together.
Okay.
And so I would like to find more opportunities that we have shared commonalities to do something, but we haven't landed on it. But the breakfast, at least now, gives us some intentional time.
So at 10 and 6, mm-hmm. do you find when you do those breakfasts, does conversation flow, or are you having to, like, pull it out of them?
Yeah, when we first started, my thought process was, you know, this is like my one time to have like a bunch of intentional, deep conversations, you know, what do you think about God and, you know, all of these type things. But what I realized is, you know, I need to, what I really want to accomplish is space that they can know and be known. And so now I try to protect it from not necessarily feeling like I've got to accomplish something, that we got to move the needle
yep.
on how they think about the world during that period. I want them to be able to talk about whatever it is they're interested in and create that space as they get older, that they look forward to that time, not this is another time I'm getting taught.
20 questions, here it comes.
Else, but a space where, you know, they, especially girls, know that I'm pursuing them and looking at them, seeing them, hearing them, very interested in what's going on in their life. But that is a battle, because again, I want to have a win. Frivolous conversation more doesn't feel like a win to me. But I know it is in the long run. So that's kind of that's the space I'm trying to create for us.
And I imagine it builds momentum to where once they get comfortable with the concept, and then maybe some of the sprinkling in some of those questions would seem more natural than going in with a list
yep.
the first time, right?
Right. Yep. Certainly. And if they want to engage in those conversations, I want to be able to bring it up, and I'll ping every now and again to see if that's something they're interested in. And if it is, great. If not, they want to talk about, you know, what age their different classmates are, then we'll nail that down too.
Perfect. All right, let's go to Bean, and like so many of my guests, I mean, you've really just woven that in from the very beginning, just your relationship with Christ, how that impacts you across all these different domains. But talk about what your faith journey's been like, and you know, kind of how that helps you show up as a leader.
Sure. Yeah, my faith journey is, as unlike my paleo diet has done for me in taking out the peaks and valleys, it is it's been, you know, pure peaks and valleys, and it's really centered on, and looking back over that path now, you know, how I view God and how I view God viewing me. You know, whatever reason, how I'm wired or whatever I picked up in our culture, you know, it certainly felt like more of a performance base, that he laid out certain do's and don't do's, and that my job through the Holy Spirit that he gave us was supposed to do as many of the good things and avoid the bad. And, you know, that leads to a lot of those up and downs. And so really trying to lean in, you know, more recently to knowing that, you know, we're a son of God, and that's what Jesus did for us. And then letting that inform and fill and overwhelm, you know, my soul into all those other components, and having that grace really, you know, drive it. So it's not trying to, again, perform and achieve for him. He did that for us, and letting all that kind of come from an entirely different place. That would be as best I can simplify all those mm-hmm. ups and downs. I mean, there's never really been doubts that God exists, but there's certainly just been doubts of how God's existence should influence how I live my life. Mm-hmm. That's really where most of those components come from. There's never been a doubt of really what's right and wrong. It's just at times, you know, wrong seemed to get me to the place where I assumed God wanted me to be, mm-hmm. instead of fully trusting in his sovereignty and his plan of where he wanted me to be and where I wanted to get to.
So how do you guard that relationship? What do your personal rhythms look like? Do you have a daily quiet time? Do you do that in the morning, or does working out compete with that, and so you have to do it in the afternoon? How does that look?
Same, yeah. I've got to do that in the morning, and that, as much as I know it, really influences my known relationship with the Lord, but then to be able to keep all of this else in priority. And that's the one thing that will have the tendency to go. For me, I've had enough time to, you know, do the 6 a.m., get home 7, and then the rest of the world in our house doesn't really start cranking up, you know, until closer date. So there's space in there for Dustin and I to have coffee together, chat through what we've read and what's going on. That's the part that it's tendencies to get squeezed, which mm-hmm. is probably when I'm going to have to move up to a 5. But yeah, it's that's where it needs to happen. If it doesn't, occasionally happen later throughout the day, but to be consistent, I have to have it in the morning. But that does really set the tone for the rest of the time.
Okay, and I know, obviously, since we go to the same church, you guys attend church together as a family. That's important to you. Mm-hmm. I think you lead a small group out of your home, right?
Correct.
So you've got some accountability there. How long have you been doing that?
We've been doing that for about 6 years.
Okay, and so the same consistent people in that group for 6 years, or come and go type thing?
Come and go.
Okay.
We've had some, there's a few people who've been there the whole time, but okay. a lot that come and go, and that's not always our choice, but people leave to go start other groups.
Yeah, well, that's good. You're replicating yourself.
Yeah, that's right.
Any accountability? Like, do you have an accountability partner? Do you have an accountability group? Is there anybody who has the freedom and the license to ask you the tough questions?
I'm glad you brought that up. You know, growing up in the South, particularly a small town, you know, you were taught don't air your dirty laundry and keep things close. And, you know, there was rumors swirling about people of what their great granddaddy did. And so you learned pretty quickly that you didn't want to show weaknesses. You didn't want to open up doors for those type things. And, you know, I lived to that standard because that's what I was taught to, was expected. And really, you know, there were some sins in my life that I never had, you know, brought to light, that I was struggling with on my own, that I never really seemed to overcome. And when moving into D.C., you know, I had some men and guys my own age really press in to be transparent. And I remember thinking when they were like, you know, be real, I remember thinking to myself, I don't really even know who I am to even be real. I've for so long projected an image of what I thought you wanted to see or hear or know to like me, that I don't even really know what that looks like myself if I really was to be real. And so that was probably for Des and I both, we experienced that at the same time of finding a community and group of people who, you know, loved us as we were. And that took some time to build that trust and level and share some things to see what the reaction would look like, to know that that's how God looks at us and others looking at us the same way. And so that's similar to exercise. That's been a piece that I've always kept consistent off and on. That's a tough relationship sometimes to find. It's not just walk
it
up
is.
And grab somebody and
hey, be my accountability partner.
Yeah. Like me no matter what I share, and yep. pour all my baggage on you and ask you a bunch of tough questions. But that's something I've always sought out, always wanted to know and find. And I think, you know, as we get older and more responsibilities, I think it's even more critical, because as you know, a lot of people can come around you who want to tell you just the nice things and just praise, and that can be a very danger drug in of itself.
Well, and I think too, when you're playing at the top and you're the one putting the businesses together and you're the one making the decisions for API, it can be very isolating.
Yeah.
Because you don't know who can I really share it with.
Right.
I don't want to tell, you know, my staff this because I don't want them to think I'm not confident, you know, and this is probably not something I'm going to tell my wife because I don't want, you know, so it's just you need that group. And that's something I'm always bringing out on the show and talk about find your tribe. And to me, it's that group around you that's going to press in no matter what, and transparent. Transparency is fundamental
Absolutely.
To finding that tribe. So Absolutely. I've talked about that a lot. I'm glad you have that in your life. Well, Caleb, any advice to a guy or girl who's listening? They want to build something of significance with their life, but they don't want to sacrifice their body, their marriage, things that are most important to them, especially their faith with Christ in the process. Mm-hmm. What would your overall advice be for someone who fits in that category?
Gosh, I think, one story would be a number of years ago when I felt kind of a great sense of pressure of folks saying, you need to step up and even lead more and step into some of these other spaces. And every place that they were saying I need to go, all I could see is that there's no way I could do that and still maintain the balance of the family life that I had. And I remember sharing that with Jeff Heine, an associate pastor, you know, at Redeemer with us. And, you know, he said, I don't believe God will ever call you into a place that going to call you to sacrifice your family. And he used Wendell Berry, who's a writer. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he and I both like Wendell Berry. And Wendell, you know, lives on a farm in Kentucky and writes in all his books and all his writings and essays and everything he does, he types on an old-timey typewriter. His wife types on a typewriter and then mails it to his publisher. But he lives on the farm, and so he's able to maintain this certain perspective. And often the tendency is that what makes us capable of being that leader as we go more and lose that foundation, and then we're really incapable of leading. Hmm. And so that's how he's able to do it. I mean, he's called to speak in all types of places. They would love if he was teaching somewhere, but he would lose the fundamental thing that makes him to talk about community, the faith, soil, all those things, because he's in that daily. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it often will look like, as you know, and when you present those opportunities, that, you know, to take it, you got to sacrifice something else. And I think that's the tension of knowing that, it, you know, I think God's timing will bring it about when you can do both. And then all those, I think, are different for all of us. And I know there's certain seasons in life that you will make some sacrifices. But I think the tendency of times for those who are very driven is that you just live in that perpetual season. And one day you're going to get around to, you know, spending the time. And, you know, with kids our age, we got a little brief moment when we're in the house. And
it's almost gone.
It's gone. So, and I think the thing in certain areas, there's a lot of places in life that are like that. So that would kind of be my story that really informed me. And I lean back on that oftentimes when I feel tension to do more.
Which really, I mean, feeds into what you talked about, what you feel responsible to. And it's not necessarily the outcome. God's sovereignty is in control, but you're just called to be faithful, right, during that process. Well, Caleb, thanks for being on. I know you're a busy guy. I appreciate you giving us an hour. I learned a lot. I know our listeners will benefit from how you're managing it all. I appreciate your humble approach to it and just sharing what has been successful for you. So thanks for being on.
Forrest, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks. See you next week. Thank you for tuning in to today's TribeCast episode. I hope you gained valuable tools that will help you maximize your life across body, being, balance, and business. If you found value, then make sure to head over to iTunes to subscribe to the show, rate it, and leave a review. Every bit helps. If you want to communicate to us, send an email to tribecast@irontribefitness.com. A lot of the feedback I've gotten has been around the subject of if I do any kind of coaching. And I have made a few slots open to those who want coaching in their business and in their personal life. So if that's you, hit me up and we'll talk. See you next week.